Jenny Russell. Welcome to Her Health and Happiness right here on UK Health Radio, your only real feel-good radio station, available on Alexa, available as a podcast on all platforms, Apple and Android. How you doing? I hope, like me, you too remember that you are blessed and highly favoured. You're alive, yes? A magnet for miracles, the solution to someone's problem, and the answer to somebody's prayer. I'm sitting in my chair, rocking from side to side, because I do love this beat. That's kind of like happy, life-giving beat. The Her Health and Happiness is a show dedicated to all aspects of female intimate health and the whole person. And this week, where I'm going to ask you, what was your life journey like? If you were to write, as I told my clients to write their living eulogy, what would people say about you? And what language do you use on yourself and around yourself? I've just returned from a celebration of life for my dear friend's father, Papa Jay. So the celebration of life service was taken today, and his body will be repatriated back to his beloved Barbados tomorrow. And by God's grace, I will be at that burial, final resting place in Barbados in a couple of weeks. And it was a lovely service. It was a really lovely service. Just knowing, I mean, Papa Jay lived a good, full, complete life. And we're told to do that. And I remember years ago when my pastor said we were supposed to die empty. And at the time, I've said this before, I didn't quite get it. I was like, what does he mean, die empty? But then I went to a funeral where literally, it was a friend's fiancé. And literally, it was more or less like, you know, he was born, he lived over there, he came over here. He ran a pub and he died. It was nothing to fill his life. And I left and I phoned my friend Derek and I'm like, you make sure you live. You better live, you know. Make sure I've got something to say at your funeral. I was like really shocked. And so I wanted to start the show with this post that I wrote the other day. And I wrote it because in 2017, when my work was published at the International Continence Society's 47th, I think it was, annual conference in Florence, I went along. I had to go along in order for my work to be published within the books that would come out into the manuals. And then there were some courses you could go to and workshops you could go to that were free. And there were other ones that you had to pay for. So I paid for anything to do with urology that I paid for, you know, like 80, 90 quid, but I just paid for them. I'm 70, 80 pounds, I think they were. And I went to the physiotherapy ones as well, because back in 2005, when I published my first book, Can a Vagina Really Buy a Mercedes? Rhetorical question, as you already know. Subtitled, What Can Your Perfect Floor Do For You? It wasn't a sex book. It was a book about the transverse abdominals, those muscles that run around behind our belly button, around our waist like a belt. The transverse abdominals, the multifidus and the pelvic floor and the impact on sexual function. So even Gardner's distributors were, the guy in his little dicky bow tie said, well, it's not a sex book, is it, Miss Russell? No, it wasn't a sex book. But it was the ultimate reward for me is to have, you know, the most amazing, orgasmic, explosive sexual experience when you're intimate. That you're not just there but you're actually enjoying the experience as you're having it. Obviously, if it's done consensually. Yeah, and so when I went to this conference, a couple of physiotherapists stood up and they were like, we have to be careful about people that speak because some of us have done degrees. And I've been at other workshops where they've tried to question me about the pelvic floor and question me about what I do. But in 2005, when I published my book, the Institute of Chartered Physiotherapists, the lady I spoke to back then, I wish I'd remembered her name, told me categorically that it was impossible. Now, for me, impossible is nothing, right? It's impossible to engage the pelvic floor through the vagina. Well, that is not true. That is actually factually incorrect, because you can, of course, engage the pelvic floor via the vaginal canal. You can actually do it. You can. And if you think about it logically, if you're having heterosexual sex and you have penetrative sex, it is not through the anal canal that you squeeze to close onto, grip and massage, and create an orgasmic experience around the penis. It is the other way around. So, I wrote this post the other day because it just made me think to myself, sometimes there are people out there who feel underqualified. And when we look at science and we look at studies, it's like there has to be a study, there has to be a science, there has to be proof that it works. And like I said, that was my proof. The actual act of intercourse is the proof that the pelvic floor is working, right? Vaginally. And when I started to work with Paul Check in the 2000s, and this was before, well, actually I'd been started this work in the 90s, and I met Paul when he came to the Harbour Club in 2001. And he encouraged me to write that first book. He didn't give me the title. It dropped into my head as I was washing the dishes, as I've said before. Excuse me. But what was interesting is that sometimes when you have testimonial success from your clients, it's known as anecdotal success or anecdotal evidence. But if a client's husband, I'm invited to the house, I've saved the client from having surgery for a prolapse. I get invited to the house and I'm offered a bottle of champagne, and the husband stands behind his wife, kisses his wife on the head, on the back of the head, and says, "Thank you for giving me my wife back." If a client comes into me who had been everywhere and had never felt her husband in the 27 years they had been married, but was able to feel him after 3 months of us working together, and the husband comes to see who I am, I think, like, I know it qualifies as evidence that it works. And that's just giving you two ends of the spectrum for two little, but I've had many, many countless testimonies. But it's very hard to get women to sit down on behind the camera and share those, because it's a very intimate, personal thing. So, but I know it works, they know it works. And it works, because obviously 2005 they said it was impossible. Now in 2024, and obviously before that, they now agree. And that's how they will teach it themselves. So I wrote this article the other day because somebody had come to me, not to question me about what I do, although people always ask you, "Oh, what did you do then? What did you study?" It's because they were questioning themselves about whether or not they knew what they knew. And so I call this part of a living eulogy, because also when you write it out, you realize just how far you've come. You realize what your foundation was for why you did what you did. But also it kind of encourages you to let you know it works. I haven't put all the details in, but I've just decided to write this article and I want to share it with you now, if you would let me. So I started it by this and saying, let's be honest, a degree carries weight and in many cases can give people that little advantage over people like myself who do not have such a qualification. But should that degree cancel out the continued testimonial success I have had for over 25 years with my clients and my whole journey to wellness? Should it cancel out your experience? It could be 10 years, 5 years, 2 years. It could be 30 or 40 years. But I don't hold a degree to this day, and I don't feel embarrassed or ashamed or like I've lost something or I'm lacking something because I haven't got it. I have lived a life of movement. I have lived a life of movement and vitality since I was a teenager. That's some 47 years of my life. It began in my teenage years at the youth club across the road to my mum's home. I grew up surrounded by activity. Our living room overlooked the park, and next to it, to the right, was the youth club where we trained 3 times per week. Back then, health wasn't something we thought about. It was simply fun. We had to run up and down the 17 floors of high-rise flats. We had to run double pavements, running the last mile of a 5-mile warm-up run. Aside from that, our social life, when we used to train on the 10 Centurion gym, Aside from that, our social life consisted of trampolining, swimming, roller skating, dancing, cycling, and horse riding, as well as weightlifting. That foundation of movement was laid, and I loved every minute of it. In my 20s, life quieted with the activity until I qualified as a gym instructor, though I prefer to say I teach movements. I don't instruct people, I teach people. At the YMCA in central London. From that moment in 1989, my light was lit. My gift was released, and I began a life of teaching classes, 21 a week. Step, circuits, weights, dance, you name it. In 1993, I was encouraged to compete in the British UltraFit Championships to find Britain's fittest woman. 8 years of competing, 8 medals, 3 gold, 4 silvers, 1 bronze, and a record holder to date. I have also run New York, London twice, and Brighton marathons. Won Channel 5's Desert Forges in the Wadi Rum Desert in Jordan. And 2 years ago, I was a runner-up in the women's singles over 45 tennis singles. Competition at our local David Lloyd's. I organised the Barbados Experience in 93 and took 30 people away for 2 weeks, which was huge back then. I have published 3 DVDs on a stability ball between 94 and 96. I published 2 books, one in 2005, the first one I told you the title, and Pelvic Floor Secrets in 2013. I've been featured on ITV's This Morning television, published in fitness magazines, including the famous Harbour Club magazine, You magazine, Mother and Toddler, Health and Fitness. I wrote for Pride for a few months, to name a few. I have been a kickstart speaker and a keynote speaker for medical professions, Hampstead Women's Police Force, Wellbeing of Women, and had my work published at the International Continence Society in Florence and Las Vegas. Today, at almost sassy, sexy 62, I cycle with a wonderful group of people, sometimes local, sometimes as much as 70 miles. I captain the David Lloyd's 4th team in tennis. We just came 2nd in our league and we've been promoted. By the way, we were the 3rd team and then our captain last year gave the captaincy up. So a new team was created in David Lloyd's and they said they were better than us. So they took our spot, never had a say. They said you'd make a good captain and I became captain of a new team, which was the old team, but we became the 4th team, and we have to start from the bottom and climb back up. But hey, the only way is up, and we were promoted in our first season. So that's fantastic. I still use my stability ball daily. You know I do an online weekly Swiss ball class, take it with me on holiday wherever I go, and my foam roller, and I run occasionally, and I do some bodyweight exercises and free weights. I coach women's wellness and continue to help women avoid surgery for bladder weakness, prolapse, and recovery of sexual feeling, all whilst improving posture, performance, and body shape. I help reduce the negative symptoms of the menopause and help them to remain relevant and productive in their careers. And I do this through my workshops and 60-day journey, corporate and one-to-one advisory services. I empower women to prioritize their well-being. This is my passion. This is natural. This is me. Life experience and testimonies qualify my expertise, and I am a testimony to well-being that continues to keep me motivated and excited to get out of bed each day. So then the question I ended that article with was, what's your journey? What has your journey been? How have you laid the foundation for the life you live today? And remembering that life experience really does count for everything. Now, the foundation you may have laid may not be the foundation that you want to keep, so you can adjust it slightly. And wherever we go, I trademarked the Physical Pension Plan Investment Program some 12 years ago, and it's health and finance in harmony. It's helping people to understand these little deposits of health, whether it's mental, emotional, hormonal, circadian health, which is your sleep, digestive health, whether it's hydrational health, whether it's, improving the way in which your thoughts, the social connections, who you hang with, your intimate health. It's a combination of all those things and the movements that matter. Because movements that matter are slightly different to, they're still exercise, but they're the movements that matter, so that the exercises that you do will be done without you compromising your own well-being and your own fitness level. So this is why I have these workshops, and there is one this weekend, which you can book online. It's an online class, it's a two-part workshop, so it's 3 o'clock this weekend, the 2nd of November, and the next one will be in 2 weeks' time on the 16th of November. And in between that, there are 3 emails sent out to help you with your action plan. It just allows you to look at your she. And I wrote some prayers for myself the other day, and I was asking God some questions, and I was looking at my own she and thinking, my she is off. Remember, the S is self, which is self-love, self-care, self-awareness. The H is heart, as health, which really, health really is hormonal harmony. The way in which we, because once the hormones are out of whack, health is going to go downhill. So health is hormonal harmony. And empowerment is really that emotional step that actually helps to balance those hormones, which is why it's your she. Because it's impossible to have hormonal harmony without emotional empowerment. And it's very hard to have those two if your self-love or your self-care or your self-awareness is off. So that's why that equilateral triangle is there. So you can look into yourself and take a deep dive. And then when you look at comes first, that's when you're looking at connections, oxygen, movement that matter, exercise, sleep, food, intimate health, rehydration, sunlight, very important to understand sunlight, and thoughts. But when you look at the 8 principles of total health, it is thoughts, breath, hydration, sleep, nutrition. I call it nutrition because many things are called food, but they lack nutrition. Intimate health and social connections. That's what we have to start looking at. Let's play a trail. Come back on the other side.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I hope that made sense for you. So I wanted to ask you then, what are you doing this weekend? Are you a person that celebrates Halloween? I am not a Halloween person. I used to get the odd pumpkin for my son when he was a baby, but I'm really not that person. And then I suppose as a Christian, I'm just not. I'm into things that are life-giving, and I just don't feel Halloween is that thing. It's all about, it's all spooky and deadly and deathly, and that's just really not me. But if you're that person, I hope you enjoy yourself. But I've grown out of it, I suppose. And my children aren't small enough for that. Although my 18-year-old wants to go to some Halloween event with his friends. But that I hopefully made sense. Now, when it comes to our bodies, when it comes to our health and happiness and our health and vitality, we have to understand the power in the words that we speak. And so this is the other post that I actually will share tomorrow. I haven't shared it yet, but this was a post I'd written. And I say it because when I hear people saying, I have, I am, that's very powerful. I ask clients when we even did a 60-day journey, I ask them to finish the statement. And the first thing is, I am. I am, I can, I will, I choose. And so the words are really important, because when you find yourself at a crossroads, when you're trying to work out where you go, how you move forwards, of all the negative news that's around us and the doom and the gloom and the cost of living and the this and this, there's two costs of living. There's the cost of living as it pertains to finances and food, and there's the cost of living as it pertains to mental, emotional and hormonal well-being. Because that news you take on board has the potential to affect the physical side of living. And some people, many times, are not living. They're just existing. And it's our, you have a duty, especially when you lose somebody, like as we did recently with Papa Jay. I feel like you have a duty to live on for yourself, but also for them, in a way, because you have an opportunity. And Papa Jay, he really spent a lot of his life trying to make sure he helped children. He was all into careers and the advancement of young black children because we were left behind and neglected. He was one of, as I learned today, one of the founder members of the Seventh-day Adventist Church that was initially on Regent Street. But even in Christianity, back then when they found it, there was still a level of prejudice where they just didn't want to see a lot of black people walking down Regent Street with their little bag in their hand with their Bibles in it. So they moved them on. So, these things exist. They still exist today. It's not that easy. And the advancement, when I was on a call recently, and it was an amazing lunch with a local, of an MP actually, a parliamentary MP that had a lunch, and I was invited along online. It was fantastic. And as we were sharing, this lady was sharing about, what happened with our careers officers. And we were sort of told, you can't look for a job in administration or in an office. You either work in a factory or you're a nurse. It's like we were pushed towards careers that weren't going to really advance who we are. Yet still, we're a very creative race. We're a very creative set of people. And there's creativity in all places. But to believe that we can't create something, and we can create a lot from nothing. We're quite used to it. So it's quite interesting. But then, I listened yesterday, I think it was Forbes Man of the Year this year. It's been on the TV and they talked about him. But he talks for himself. When he met his wife 27 years ago, he was jobless and homeless. And now he's the most influential black man in the UK in 2024. So it's really about, she stood behind him, and it's what you see. Because the eye sees one thing. The visual eye sees one thing. But the spiritual eye can see something totally different. So to meet somebody who's jobless and homeless, and to see that person and see what you see in them, but moreover, to encourage them to see it in themselves, means that you must speak life-giving words. Because it would be impossible, this is when it would be impossible, to get someone to go from where they are there to rise to where they are if they can't see it in themselves. Now that's a journey, but all you've got to do is meet somebody who's willing at some point, because you can't go any further down, to say, well, what have I got to lose? That's where you need to get to, that open mind. So you're just trying to change the set mind so that it can actually set itself on a course that will actually help it rather than one that's hindering it at the moment. So the words we speak carry immense life-giving power, especially when it comes to our health and well-being. I often hear people say, I have diabetes, or I am sick, or I am a diabetic, unknowingly giving these conditions power over their lives. But what if the way we speak about our health is a part, or is the part of the problem, or is the problem itself? Most sicknesses today are a direct result of our nutrition and lifestyle choices. Addressing these root causes is the key to healing, but it starts with how we perceive and speak about our bodies. When we claim a sickness, we reinforce it in our minds and emotions. The connection between our emotions and hormones is profound. How we talk to ourselves can either invite illness in or push it away. To achieve health, we must stop identifying with sickness and instead speak life into our bodies. Whilst this may sound simple for many, it's a challenging shift. Now, the pastor that read a word of encouragement to us today was very, very interesting, because what he said was, I'm a diabetic. He's not a diabetic. He's a man who has acquired diabetes. There's a big difference. It's about the word and how you say it. But this shift is crucial for finding balance within the body, especially when it comes to hormonal harmony. The body is designed to function optimally. Imbalances are caused by poor nutrition, poor sleep, elevated stress, emotional wounds, and all of those things can throw the body, of course. Emotional empowerment, how we feel about ourselves, our worth, and our identity, begins early in life. From the family we are born into and the experiences we have, especially around our major milestones, like our first menstrual cycle. Our hormonal balance and emotional strength are deeply connected, shaping how we experience health throughout our lives. So this weekend, She Comes First, the online workshop, we're diving deeper into these connections in our She, in our self, health and empowerment. It's a two-part workshop series designed to help you understand how to align your body's systems for optimal health. This is your opportunity to start building your physical pension plan investment program. That's my trademark that I have. Investing into your long-term health. And literally, when you think about it, over the 2 weeks, including you've got 2 hours this weekend, 2 hours on the 16th of November, and 3 emails in between to support you through as you start to develop an action plan that you bring back on the 16th, it works out to be as little as £6.21 per day. So my plea to you is to let's start speaking life and empowering our bodies and reclaiming our well-being. Now, all change starts with a conversation. And this is a conversation that we need to start to have. Not with someone else, with ourselves. And if it was that easy, we'd all be doing it. And it really is about choice. It really is. And I spoke to my son the other day, my oldest son. He's like the complete opposite of me. I will speak life, he will speak poverty. I will speak prosperity, he will see things as he sees with a naked eye. And that's why even the Bible says, my people perish for lack of knowledge. But also, there's songs like, give me wisdom to see things like you do. Because it's not what you actually see with the naked eye that counts. It's what your imagination can bring to you. So last week, Thursday, there's a lovely little theatre in Enfield Town, not far from where I live, called the Dugdale Centre. And they had, for Black History Month, they put on the Romeo and Juliet Forever for EVA, the Black Jamaican version of Romeo and Juliet. They showed that, and then they had a panel discussion afterwards. And it was really powerful. I mean, I got lost a bit in some places. And my dad was from Jamaica, God rest his soul. My mum's from Barbados. When you talk with a really heavy Jamaican accent, I'm lost. So they were talking. But what was really interesting is the guy that played Romeo is a tall guy, a bit thick set, round belly. But he was being bullied in school. So you first of all see them in the school and you see this guy, this slim guy come, pick on him, take his pencil, snap it, throw it back at him. But the guy doesn't respond at all. He puts his head down. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't fight back. Doesn't do anything. Because his cuddly bear that's bullied. So his size doesn't intimidate the bully, which may be a bit surprising for some people. Then you see him when he gets home and he goes into the back room and his mum, it looks like she's had a stroke and she's not very well. So he has to empty the pan first, wash it out. Then he sets the bath and he picks her up and he puts her into the bath. And for me, excuse me, the most beautiful scene then happens where he takes the sponge and he runs it up her arm to wash her arm. But it's the softness at which he washed her, which was that love was, it was so gentle, it was so soft. It was a shift from the school to home. And then, of course, she must have been, had a little tiny thing where she sold the jerk chicken. So once he gets her ready, he then goes outside and he does like takeaways. So he's selling jerk chicken and different bits and pieces. And what you saw as well, there was a girl whose cousin picked her up. But I think he had a little soft spot for her. Now at the school, they were told to go home for the weekend and read Romeo and Juliet. So that's how the story started. Then he sits down and starts to read the play, the book, and the light goes out. So he gets the candle and he lights the candle and he continues to read. And then you're just into Romeo and Juliet. And you watch the whole thing and the way in which they did it and just the language and the body language and the facial expressions and all the emotion and different nuances. And it's very powerful. And then, you know, she takes his poison but waiting for the kiss. He thinks she's dead. He takes a poison. But she comes back to life because he kisses her. But she has nothing left for her to take and he's gone. And then he opens this door and... You're not going to watch it because I've just ruined it now. He opens the door and his mum's laying on the bed. And that just let you know that that was his imagination bringing Romeo and Juliet to life. And in a climate where people don't read very much, it was really beautiful to witness. And you go, oh my Gideon, it was wonderful. Because this is a person that allowed the words on the page to come to life so much so that the young girl that whose cousin picked her up at the beginning, that was his Juliet. He had a soft spot for her. And obviously they're different families and the rivalry that comes in and then they're going for his life. It was just the different ways in which things all twisted together. But it twisted together out of he brought a book to life. That is what words can do. It's what I'm trying to say. I'm saying all that to say this. That's the power of words. Now imagine the power of words on a page taking you somewhere, like the Book of Narnia, all those different shows you see. They take you somewhere. So if they can do it in film and they can do it in a book, then the question then becomes is why can't you do it for yourself? So you've got to remember that you're not useless. You're fearfully and wonderfully made. All the bad things don't happen to you. You're an overcomer. You're the head and not the tail. You're above and not beneath. You're more than a conqueror. You've got to decide what language you're going to keep speaking into the situations you find. Because whether you believe yes or no, the Bible does not say you will not face trials and tribulations. It says you'll be persecuted for Jesus' sake. It said lots of things. But he says, I will be with you through the trials. He didn't say, I'll wait for you to come out of them. He said, I will be with you through the trials. It says, count it all joy when the many trials come, knowing the testing of your faith will produce patience. And let patience have its perfect work, that you emerge complete, lacking nothing. Now, when people find themselves being diagnosed with sicknesses and diseases, after my dad died of a non-Hodgkin lymphoma, I really asked, and my auntie actually, when she died from stomach cancer in 2006, I was trying to work something out. I was like, how do some people get told that they're not well and that they've only got a set amount of time left. And literally it's that time and they're gone. And others get told, like our dear Johan, who runs this radio station. When I met him and he interviewed me before I came onto the radio show, about three and a half years ago now. It was before the pandemic actually, so it's long. It's very good. Oh, I've been on for ages. He said... that, you know, he had 7 tumours in his head and they gave him 3 months to live. And he's like, no, I've got a wife and 2 young children and I'm not about to leave them fatherless and a widow. And so it was a decision. It was a desire to live, followed through by faith without works is dead. So followed through by the faith in that if he does some changes, then he can have, you know, we say God has the final say. You have to decide whether you're going to let a medical professional have the final say over your body, your vitality, and your length of days, or you. And it's not about making changes just so that you can get through the sickness and come out on the other side and then go back to what you were doing. Because if you make changes that take you away from where you don't want to be, then it clearly tells you that the things you were doing beforehand contributed to where you found yourself in a compromising position that could have called you home much earlier than you want to go. So it's, you know, like for me, I like a glass of wine. I like a drink. I like to drink at home. But I made a decision at the beginning of this month, before that, I want to change my relationship with alcohol. Because as we get older, I think we don't need to be drinking as much, right? Even though I'm still active, I still don't need to be drinking as much. So I decided that I'll start with October. And it's really like for me, if I go out somewhere, I'll have a drink when I'm out. But when I'm at home, I want to get out of the habit of drinking at home just because I can. So I'm coming out of that habit. And yesterday, because I wanted to take, I had a couple of those small bottles of Sauvignon Blanc. And I bought a couple of bottles yesterday and brought them home. And I decided I'll have one small can, little baby cans, yesterday. And I poured it into a wine glass. I took one sip and I was like, oh my God, I really can't drink this. I really don't want it. So I didn't. It's like, down the sink it goes. So there's three and they can just sit there. But it was interesting because I think like the intention is so strong that actually the taste wasn't nice. Like I just didn't enjoy it at all. So that's a good thing for me. I think it's a good thing. Papa J loved a really nice glass of red. If I get a good red, I could have that. But it's outside as opposed to at home. So over the course of this month, I've had drink on four occasions. But I can tell you, my vitality, I've got a lot of energy anyway, but my vitality has gone up. You know, cognition, energy, sleep quality, even the little niggles, everything. It's just amazing. Because I'm having those, because I make my celery juice every morning. I make myself either the grape juice of ginger or the orange and lemon and turmeric and ginger. Yesterday at my mum's, I took apple, orange and ginger. I do honeydew, melon and ginger. I make so many different juices all the time. I eat lots of greens. But I also have been having a lot more sugar in the form of Marks and Spencer's pistachio and almond cookies. Which is dangerous, and the habanero tortillas. So it's really about looking at the changes that you make and then recognizing that these are lifestyle changes that are good. Now, I'm a naturally slim person, the slimmest in my family, next to my brother, myself and my brother. The rest of my family are not like us. But there are many people around me who think that I'm intentionally trying to lose weight. Not a chance. Since I had my son 30 years ago, I've just fluctuated between an 8 and a 10, an 8 and a 10. I went down to a size 6 for a period when I first had him, first couple of years. But I've stayed around 8 and a 10. That whole belief that when we get older, the body won't work as well. You know, you'll end up with this round tummy and, you know, the body will change and the skin will sag and that's not my portion. That's not my portion in Jesus' name. And it doesn't have to be yours either. These are just, because obviously we've got a stress journey we've taken. We've got a hormonal journey we've taken. We've got a mental emotional history we take into the menopause. And as we get older, can I just encourage you on one thing? People have this notion that who don't move to tell you that when you get older and you might have a niggle, you need to slow down and stop moving. Don't stop moving. The body was designed to move. You change the movement patterns. I don't compete. I don't train the way I used to train. But I do competition, but it's called tennis. But the level of tennis that I play is nothing like the level of tennis you see on TV. And I'm happy for that. But what I also love about tennis is the social aspect of it and the amount of women that I see my age or a bit older, who've got great tennis intelligence, who know how to place the ball, know how to move around the court. May not move as nimbly as younger people, although you can't drop shot me and I won't get there, because I will. excuse me. But they will still keep moving and they will still keep playing. And there's a whole social arm. And social connections, we know, I added that as a principle in lockdown, way before they started to talk about it in the end, towards the end of 2020. But we know that loneliness and social connectivity is crucial. So to be able to meet and to be able to be around people that play, and also a lot of these guys that play, you know, tennis is a much more sort of affluent sport. So you're around people that have a level of intellect, level of affluence, and have a better outlook on life. So it encourages you. So I would just want to encourage you to find a sport or something that you can do that will encourage you to actually have, like, I have a reason to get out of bed in the morning. And my reason to get out of bed in the morning, well, one would be my mum, secondly be my sons, three, because God gave me the opportunity to do so. So, you know, that's it. I have all those reasons to get up. I've got, you know, matches to play, or I just want to go and play. On the Sunday, it was our last official ride last Sunday, but we have a cycling ride. We're looking at maybe taking the cycling ride abroad next year to Jamaica, the cycling club. So there's other reasons, and that will just be phenomenal, you know. There's reasons to be up, but I know ultimately that my primary purpose, whether I do it through public speaking, which I love doing, radio, which I love doing, or in my workshops and one-to-one coaching and advisory corporate, and even in education system, my primary drive is to help as many women as I can help their health, to actually... People can always say to you, your health is your wealth. But they won't. It's not really. It should be, but it isn't. Because there is a price on it. And the price tag is very low. And I say that because it really depends on the quality of the food that you're willing to invest into. The quality of the bed that you're willing to sleep on. The quality of the clothing. And I don't mean that from a designer perspective. When I say the quality of the clothing, I'm talking about materials that breathe, cotton, silks. I'm talking about materials that breathe, pure wools and things that breathe, as opposed to many man-made materials. And especially those in shops where they're only designed to last for one or two washes. When it comes down to the quality of your health and your pelvic floor, the integrity, rather than investing into adult nappies that can take up to 400 years for one to biodegrade, you actually say, right, this is not my portion. I don't want to be this person who does not have control of my bladder. That's what we were when we were toddlers. That's not what we should be when we're just at this sassy, sexy 62. Absolutely no way. So there are structural things that need to be done. It's not a case of just holding your urine and that will work. No, you have to look at the structural contributions to why your bladder is weak. You have to look at the digestive issues as to why your bladder is weak. You have to look at the hormonal issues as to why your bladder may be weak. You have to look at the emotional issues as to why your bladder may be weak. So you look at the postural issues as to why your bladder is weak. You have to look at all of these things. You have to consider all of these factors, the hydration, the sleep. You've got to consider everything. What is the movements that you're doing? Because they have movements that matter. Then there's movements that make your problem worse. So you have to understand all of those. And if you're not assessing, you're guessing.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tennis Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So we're coming towards the end of the show. I just thought I'd just finish with a little bit about the 60-day journey, because that next one starts in the middle of November. And I was recently asked, what does my 60-day journey entail? And like, what would a typical day look like? And so I thought I'd just answer that question, give you a little snippet of what a real day looks like, what a real day one looks like, once I've, because I'll start by giving an overview of the journey. And then, first of all, I start with self, which is the first letter of she. And I look at it as the equilateral triangle that I mentioned to you earlier on, self-love, self-care, and self-awareness. So we take a dive. So self is done over 3 nights. And so the workshops, the 60-day, the first few days are only about 20 minutes, 25 minutes long. And we look at self-love, first night, self-care, the second night, and self-awareness, the third night. So when we look at self-love, we take a look at it from my perspective, and then we finish with a task. So there are a couple of key points that I like to bring out when I look at self-love, what I focus on. So first of all, I focus on helping you to recognize the importance or the influence of the societal pressures and the expectations that you face that can easily erode your self-esteem. That's the first part that I focus on. So we look at self-love from the standpoint of what we were born into, whether we're born into a loving family, whether we're born into a family that may be abusive or in drugs, whether we're born into a family and taken straight into care, whether we're born and we lose our parents in childbirth, our mother in childbirth. That has a big influence on societal pressures, right? That start from when you're a baby and even instilling you by the time you're 2. But then we move further in, and obviously as we get older, because that plants and starts off your self-esteem, and then it just really depends on what's around you and the environment that erodes it. Then we look at self-love and unforgiveness, and we discuss how self-love and unforgiveness cannot exist in the same body. So we look at what we are holding on to, what emotions in the body impact which organs on a functional level as well as an emotional level. For example, the liver. So you know the liver is emotionally aligned to the emotion of anger. But I'm not sure if many of you realize that it is functionally aligned with having heavy menstrual cycle. So many times that liver and the heavy menses, it may be a sign that the liver is off balance and it's not... It has an issue with blood storing. So you have to look at that. But these indicators are indicators that a trained professional will be able to recognize. But also you may have issues with your eyes as well. But a trained professional will be able to recognize that these are imbalances within the liver, which could, for example, like I said, be a blood storing issue. But there's so many different things, right? But then we look at the emotional impact of physical well-being. As mentioned a moment ago, we look at the emotions we store in the body and the potential they have to affect the function of our internal organs. So we've got to look at the function of our internal organs as well. Then, as I mentioned before, with the power of talk, which is why this flows in so nicely together today, is like, what is your self-talk? And because literally your self-talk is just your thoughts verbalized. Then we look at the consequences of self-talk on self-worth and self-esteem. And then we tie this together with a starting point for our life perceptions as they influence our treatment of ourselves and our overall life satisfaction. And then the task is then set and the journey begins. So that allows you to dive into yourself, tap into your history. It's an opportunity, as I call it, to reveal, to redeem, as the Bible puts it. You can call it universal law, but it is a revelation of those innermost thoughts that you have buried, that you may have, maybe the thing that you need to remove rather than keep buried deep within you, because you're not realizing that you're carrying them, which means they remain with you and the impact they have on you. So that is a journey which is really, really amazing. And it's a 60-day journey that we do over 60 days. People ask me, they come at the weekend off. What I do is it's live from Monday to Thursday. Every session is recorded. So if you can't make it, if you're out, you know, you won't miss out. The session's recorded and it's shared the same evening. But then I pre-record Friday, Saturday and Sunday, because I do understand that people have lives, they have things they want to do, and they may not be available to take part in that session. So then I record that, so it's there for you to have. But it is time for me to finish. I have run out of time. So remember, you are blessed and highly favored. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. You are designed for signs and wonders. Don't let anybody steal your joy. Until next week, in health and happiness. Stay blessed, stay well.